Postcards from Beyond, written and narrated by Paul Harris. What is consciousness? Someone I know is a very deep sleeper. One morning in 1987, he woke up to discover that most of the trees in his garden, along his street, and down the main road, had been thoroughly uprooted during the night. There had been a great storm, with hurricane-force winds that had lasted 3 or 4 consecutive hours during the night. He had somehow managed to completely sleep through it all. He hadn't heard a thing. There is so much uncertainty and speculation around the subject of consciousness, which is remarkable considering how utterly familiar we all are with it. What is consciousness? It is that which constitutes the knowing or awareness of an object. It's experiencing the pain of a headache, the tasting of wine, or seeing a golden sunset. This is what it means to be conscious. Yet, for some reason, we feel compelled to turn to the experts, the scientists, the philosophers, and the psychologists to explain it all to us. And what a complex and unwieldy affair their theories and speculations turn the simple act of awareness into. It is entirely possible to come to a complete understanding of consciousness, not through thinking about it or trying to measure it, but through the simple, clear, and direct observation of it as it occurs. Through such observation, we can fully comprehend not only what consciousness is, but also, and perhaps even more importantly, what it is not. Why is understanding consciousness so important? The Buddha included consciousness as one of the 5 aggregates, which, along with feeling, perception, mental formations, and materiality, make up the whole of subjective experience at the ultimate level. Due to ignorance, we cling mightily to the deeply held emotional conviction that these 5 aggregates are facets of a solid and separate entity, ego or personality, i.e. me. We wholeheartedly believe, therefore, that it's me that knows. It's me that sees, hears, smells, tastes and touches. It's me who is the conscious witness to all of life's events, distinct and entirely separate from the sights, sounds, smells, tastes and touches of the external world. We believe this dualism to be so, and perceive it to be so, to such an extent, indeed, that we never stop, even for a moment, to ask ourselves whether it is at all possible or even necessary for consciousness to have an owner, or whether that sense of separateness relates to anything real. If there really is a separation, however, between an experience and me who experiences it, between consciousness of an object and the object itself, then it should be possible to locate that exact line. As an experiment, observe a distant visible object, like the disk of the moon, and ask yourself, where do I stop and where does the moon begin? Where is that line of separation? This is not an intellectual exercise. Don't think about it. Just observe your experience. Where does that line occur which differentiates direct awareness of a thing from the thing itself? Does it even exist? Gaining insight into the true nature of consciousness is fundamental to realizing enlightenment, and it pays to keep things as simple as possible. Throw out all those tangled theories about what you or others think consciousness is, and practice mindfully observing and labeling experience using easily comprehensible information. For instance, there are 5 physical senses: eye, ear, nose, tongue, and body. For each sense, there is an equivalent kind of consciousness, i.e., seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and touching. For ease of exposition, the Buddha talked of mind as being the 6th sense, so there is also mind consciousness, i.e., the awareness of mental activities such as thoughts, feelings, perceptions, memories, fantasies, and the like. In addition, there is one more type of consciousness called mind consciousness element, which will be discussed later. That makes a maximum of 7 distinct kinds of consciousness that can be observed and labeled. The art of Vipassana is simply to investigate one's immediate experience and mentally note whatever occurs. If the sound of an ambulance siren occurs, then sound is noted, and also the perception of the ambulance. As insight develops, it becomes possible to differentiate consciousness from the object. It becomes obvious, for instance, that sound is one thing and hearing, the knowing of sound, is another. The same applies to awareness of mind states, with perception being one thing and the awareness of that perception, mind consciousness, being another. As noting continues and insight deepens, it gradually becomes clear that despite being 2 entirely dissimilar things, any sensory object and its equivalent consciousness arise in unison, and that you cannot have one without the other. If there is no sound, no hearing arises. If there are no thoughts or other mental objects, such as when in deep sleep, no mind consciousness arises. Equally, if there is no hearing, literally no sound exists, as in the example of the man sleeping through the storm. Thus, the reality of conditionality becomes clear at a very intimate level for the meditator. Consciousness and object are mutually dependent upon one another for their existence. You cannot separate them. It also becomes self-evident that neither consciousness nor its object last for more than the briefest of moments. As quickly as they come into being, so they pass away again. One moment of consciousness must immediately cease in order to allow another moment of consciousness to arise. Look closely, and you will discover that consciousness arises in series. You can never be aware of more than one object at a time. If seeing consciousness arises, then that is all that exists at that moment. There is no hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, or mind consciousness. Given their interdependent natures, it's obvious that if either consciousness or its object is removed, in that instant, the other also ceases. So, we discover that there is no permanent, unchanging, and ongoing consciousness that can be identified and grasped after as being me or mine. What we do find, however, is an endless stream of momentary occurrences of consciousness that arise and pass away in a completely natural and spontaneous way. Just like a river, The bubbling stream of conscious experience has no discernible first beginning. It flows on endlessly in an entirely impersonal way and is never the same for two consecutive moments. The meditator comprehends that all awareness of whatever kind is wholly and forever anatta, non-self. It can't be underestimated what a seismic shift in your perception of life this discovery brings. Who or what, however, is it that knows all this? Surely I am the permanent conscious witness behind this ceaseless flow of sensory events, the one who knows that consciousness is non-self. When, inevitably, this question arises for a meditator, they are directed right back to watching the arising of consciousness with two questions. Does the awareness of any of the six other types of consciousness last? And if none of the six types of consciousness arise, can any subsequent awareness of them arise? Through direct insight into the matter, the meditator is able to give a definitive answer, no, on both counts. In Buddhism, the awareness that takes the immediately preceding moment of consciousness as its object is called mind-consciousness element. It too arises entirely due to conditions and passes away immediately. It's this seventh type of consciousness that people often mistakenly assume is the self or conscious witness existing behind or parallel to events. Mind-consciousness element is subtle, and without paying proper attention, it's easy to misperceive it as being permanent and unchanging. Look closely, however, and you will see that just as with every other kind of consciousness, it can only arise dependent upon a suitable object being present and ceases immediately. Through insight, the understanding comes that there is no durable, independent witness behind events at all. Some people mistakenly associate consciousness with nibbana. During meditation, when the mind is calm and free of hindrances, it's possible to perceive geometric space as extending out in all directions to infinity. It's then easy to conceptualize how all imaginable physical and mental objects might enter into, inhabit, and exit this plane of infinite space. Concluding that consciousness of this plane of infinite space must also be infinite, there is a strong urge to assume that infinite consciousness is the answer. This assumption, however, is wrong and ignores so much. Consciousness can take anything as an object, including such subtle and vaunted states as the plane of infinite space. No matter how impressive the object is, however, the fundamental nature of awareness is to arise due to conditions and immediately pass away. The fact that this particular consciousness takes infinity as its object does not make it eternal. The hallucination of permanence, however, causes the meditator to conceptualize this infinite space as being ongoing. This is the case even when the mind is engaged in observing something else, and therefore the meditator believes it's something that endures and can be consciously entered and exited at will. This, however, is not the case. The meditator ignores the fact that when there is consciousness of one object, no other consciousness or object exists. It may appear that the same object can be held in the stream of consciousness for a protracted period of time, but close observation shows that it is neither the same object nor the same consciousness in successive moments. In reality, each subsequent event is self-similar to the preceding one, but never actually the same one. Nibbana is beyond consciousness. When you have fully perfected your view and have ceased to misperceive reality, then you understand the true nature of consciousness. You understand that you cannot delineate awareness as a thing in itself, distinct from the object of awareness. You understand, therefore, that consciousness divides, and that any division creates dissatisfaction, conflict, and suffering. Knowing this, you cease to grasp after consciousness as being self, and in ceasing to grasp, the mind no longer upholds the illusion of dualistic consciousness. All that remains is Nibbana. What is meant by Nibbana? It's impossible to define. This beautiful poem, however, by the Tibetan master Nyoshul Kempo Rinpoche, comes nearer than most in encapsulating its simplicity and wonder. Profound and tranquil, free from complexity, uncompounded, luminous clarity, beyond the mind of conceptual ideas. This is the depth of the mind of the victorious ones. In this, there is not a thing to be removed, nor anything that needs to be added. It is merely the immaculate, looking naturally at itself.